Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on April 22nd, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Supergirl number 40. This is part 4 of the Who is Superwoman storyline. And overall, I've been enjoying this arc. I like kind of the new direction they've been taking the character, you know, with the whole new Krypton storyline and stuff, and just making her a much more likable character. Now, going into this issue, I had a couple of theories on who Superwoman might be. I hadn't really given it much thought and wasn't really too concerned about it. The guesses I had, not correct. But I'm okay with that. I think they had a really nice twist at the end with the reveal of who Superwoman was, and I'm really curious to see how they play that out next issue. So it made for a good reveal here, and while it wasn't who I was expecting, it also didn't feel like it came totally out of the blue and it's like, what the hell? You know, it was a good twist, a good spin there. And I'm really liking this version of Reactron that they've got. He makes for a really cool villain, and particularly with the whole gold kryptonite stuff. And I really think that this twist to how Gold K works, where it only removes the powers temporarily, makes it much more of a threat than gold kryptonite used to be pre-crisis.
Well, it makes it more viable as a threat, because, I mean, Gold K before was, you know, it would permanently take your powers away, which sort of made it useless as a threat because you're not going to really take away Superman or Supergirl's powers permanently. So you always had to come up with some kind of workaround as to why it never really affected them. Whereas now, by toning it down like that, you can actually use it against them and, you know, have that short period of time where they don't have the powers and have them have to deal with that.
Exactly. Because it's technically less of a threat, it becomes more of a viable threat story-wise, like you said. And they can do things with it now they just couldn't do before. And, you know, for some reason, when they had used it, I guess, in the new Krypton storyline, I was thinking it lasted like a minute or something, but here they establish it's only for like 15 seconds. Now, it kind of begs the question of if you're getting bathed by the gold kryptonite radiation, how come after 15 seconds it stops having any effect after having such a pronounced one? I mean, that kind of boggles the mind, but hey, those are the rules they set up. I'm okay with it, and it makes for some fun stuff here. Now, they had a really good fight scene here, and what I liked is they had a nice callback to the fact that Supergirl has been coached and trained by Batman as well as by Wonder Woman, and we actually get to see Supergirl using her brains here. And it's this aspect of the personality that I'm liking a lot more than kind of that spoiled party girl attitude she had for the earlier part of this series. So I think they're doing some good stuff with the character. I think they've kind of repositioned her well, getting her more into the Superman corner of the universe, and I think making her a more viable character if they want to put her over in one of the Titans books or in the Justice League or somewhere else. So overall, I was very happy with this issue.
I thought it was a really good issue. I'm really liking Jamal Igel's art. He's got a nice, clean style. The covers have been really nice on this run. Like you said, I liked the callback to the Batman and Wonder Woman training. I like that, you know, she has to think to fight against Reactron, and the reveal on Superwoman, you know, was reasonable, but totally came out of left field. It was not what I wasn't expecting that, you know, that to be the person that it was. So I'll be curious to how that actually gets panned out and explained in the next issue or two. So good overall. I think they're really, really strong character. And I like this take on Supergirl where she's a strong female lead, and she's not like so totally tarted up like they had her for a while, where I think you could actually take this run of Supergirl and give it to a young girl as a role model of a strong female character, not like feel like you're, you know, influencing them with, you know, something that's not that wholesome. I think this is pretty well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one of the things on the art, you were mentioning what a great job Jamal Igel's doing, and I agree with that entirely. If you go to the staple and then flip one page further back in the book, on the last panel of those two pages, we've got a shot of Supergirl just kind of flying up and zooming out somewhere. And Jamal does this really kind of a cool thing where, I mean, arguably you could say it's a cheat or whatever, but it's a neat one, where we get kind of the red blur effect for Supergirl's cape or whatnot, but we get a nice kind of shot of the S in it. And a nice little stylized thing, but it's something that, you know, I'm really not seeing a lot of other artists, you know, kind of doing these sorts of little touches in the book. I mean, it's akin to what Ethan Van Sciver has been doing over on Flash Rebirth with the Flash effects, and certainly over on Green Lantern with kind of retooling how that stuff works. And that kind of creating of a visual shorthand or whatever, I think, is a nice touch and something that's really been missing from comics, I think, for a while.
Yeah. Very nicely done. Now, who's the artist on the cover?
That is a good question. It is...
Okay. Oh, Josh Middleton. There it is. A few. I mean, he does a nice job, too. I mean, he hasn't done a whole lot other than covers lately. He did that first NYX run, and he has a nice clean style. It's very complimentary to the interior artwork, which is nice. I know they like to have different artists on the covers a lot of times. When the artist on the cover is complimentary to the interior art, that's always a nice nice touch, not too different.
Yeah. Personally, I'd give this a 4 out of 5. I think it's a very strong 4. Overall, really good issue, and again, I was very happy with it.
Same here.
So anything else on that one, or move on?
Let's move on to Fantastic Force number 1 from Marvel. Now, this book, even though they have somewhat of a recap inside, I'm going to guess that if you did not read that New World arc over in Fantastic Four, the Mark Miller, Brian Hitch run from 554 to 561, I'm going to guess you'll be like really pretty lost coming into this series. This is not a first issue that seemed that you know, picking it up off the rack friendly to me.
I actually kind of disagree with that. Certainly you benefit if you've read the stuff over in Fantastic Four that this is spinning out of. But even once you get past that recap page, the first story page basically tells you New World is a facsimile of present-day Earth, and it's now got, you know, 8 billion refugees from the future who've just landed there. Now, do you get the context of all that, the how, the why, all that happened? No, but you get the status quo going in. So if you're willing to hit the ground running, you know, I think people can come into this with a clean slate and be okay. Now, given that it's only one story arc in Fantastic Four you'd have to go read to get, you know, the background on this, it's certainly worth doing that. But I didn't feel this was as potentially perplexing of a first issue as, say, the New Exiles we talked about a year or two back, and some other stuff we've seen.
I don't think it's the most confusing thing in the world. I just think that it's not the most new reader-friendly first issue I've ever read. I'm not saying it's terrible. I'm just saying, to me, it seems like reading that arc in Fantastic Four would make it a tremendous amount better, and I just, it, maybe some of our listeners who picked this up and didn't read Fantastic Four can chime in. Since we both read the Fantastic Four, maybe it's a little hard for us to be objective on it, but to me, it's just, I liked it because I liked the other arc, but just seemed a little, you know, they were tying off all kinds of loose ends from that arc. So if you didn't, you know, you have Johnny and his girlfriend here that, you know, they're tying off. You got the thing with the old Sue that they're tying off. And there's just lots of references back as you go through it to that other series. And all I'm saying is that as a first issue, it's more of a continuation of that other one as opposed to something new in and of itself.
No, and certainly it is a continuation. But, you know, as much as they're tying off some stuff, I think they give you enough context as to what's being tied off and stuff that I don't think people would be completely perplexed and whatnot. Now, I'm curious if there are many people who are reading this that didn't read that arc in Fantastic Four. Because, I mean, I really don't think Marvel gave this much of a promotional push, and I'd be a little curious as to why somebody would pick this up not having read that Fantastic Four storyline. Now, in theory, this may somehow tie into the Marvel 1985 and Old Man Logan stuff, which, you know, we were told that, you know, there was this grand plan and all these things were going to kind of dovetail together. And here we are, you know, what, a year later, and really I haven't seen that too much. I mean, overall, I thought this was a good story. It had solid art. I really don't know that we need another comic in the Marvel lineup taking place on an alternate reality. I mean, the whole artificial creation of New World and stuff like that is enough of a different take on the idea that I'm okay with it. But it just seems like the Marvel lineup of titles has gotten so fragmented across so many realities compared to how it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where, granted, most of it was all in New York, but it was, you know, even the stuff that wasn't in New York was all in the same planet or plane of reality. To me, the biggest downside on this issue was the price. It's a 22-page story for $3.99. Now we get 9 pages of behind-the-scenes stuff, and I thought it was really good behind-the-scenes stuff, much better than the average, you know, sort of thing we get in most of the other books. But really, I would have preferred if it was a $2.99 book without that stuff.
Do you know if this is, well, actually, it's a mini series, so it'll be $3.99 every issue. I wonder if Marvel is going to continue having even the 9 pages of extra material past the first issue, if they'll just drop it down to 22 pages, period, and keep it at $3.99.
With titles like Big Hero 6 and the second NYX series, they kept the back matter. But it was usually just, you know, a couple of sketch pages or something that was very clearly filler material. So I would, at this point, expect we'd see, you know, again, early drafts of the script, a couple of sketch pages, stuff like that. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they dump it either. It's cheaper to not put anything there than to fill the pages with something.
Right.
I am curious, though, like I said, how many people who didn't read the storyline in Fantastic Four are even going to pick this up. It just seems to me like it's got a ceiling as to how well it's going to sell based on the readership of that story arc.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay, I thought. It was okay. It was probably not worthy of being $3.99, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. I felt a lot happened in this storyline, in terms, or this issue, in terms of, you know, again, setting up the characters, the status quo, where things were going, and, you know, it seemed to move along nicely, but it's so tangential. I mean, they literally cut it off from the mainstream Marvel Universe, that in terms of the big picture for the Marvel Universe, this is irrelevant. And once this miniseries is over, 50-50 if we'll ever see these characters again.
Right.
So that in and of itself makes it a little bit of a hard sell at $3.99.
It seems to me like unless you really, really loved that FF run with the New Earth and all that, there's pretty much no reason to pick this up. I mean, if you really love that run and you want to see what happens to these characters now that they're on New Earth and all that kind of stuff, great. This is your cup of tea. But if you were kind of like, if you didn't read that FF run, this is kind of what I was getting at earlier. I mean, if you didn't read that FF run at all, or you kind of read it and you're like, eh, that was okay, there's not a whole lot of reason to pick this up.
And I agree with that. Where I was disagreeing earlier is I think people could understand what's going on here, but I agree there's really no reason they would care what's going on here if they haven't read the other story.
And maybe that's more of the characterization I should have come up with. It was like, I don't understand why, you know, somebody would pick this up and be going on with it unless they were, you know, getting something out of it from the other one. It just seemed to me like it was so dependent on the other storyline.
Well, I'll take that a step further and not so much question why somebody would read it, but why somebody would publish it. Because 5-issue miniseries, they fill, okay, 5 issues for Marvel's publishing slots or whatever, you know. But what does Marvel get out of this? What's their exit strategy? You know, sure, they've gotten a miniseries out of it. They'll get whatever money they get. They get another trade paperback. Great, fine. But this doesn't seem to me like it's going to be a viable ongoing franchise. You know, again, they've cut it off from the mainstream Marvel universe, so it's going to be hard to kind of, you know, I mean, they could dovetail it back in or whatever, but I'm not really getting the sense that's going to happen. So unless they think they can spin this off into its own kind of, you know, solo alternate reality title, kind of like Exiles, I don't get it. And even Exiles is a bad example, because sure, the first series won 100 issues, but now they've relaunched it twice in the last 2 years just to kind of keep it afloat. So I don't see the long-term plan that Fantastic Force would fit into at Marvel. So while it's a perfectly good story and I enjoyed it, I think it's got limited sales potential based on how the other storyline did, and no long-term sales potential because of all of that.
I think what we're finding, at least for me, is, and people can chime in on the forum on if they agree or not with this, but when you have something like this, especially now that comics are getting more and more expensive, when you have something that totally diverges from and is kind of out in a pocket reality almost of its own that doesn't tie into Marvel continuity, is that an appealing thing or not? I mean, to me, it seems like if it would spin off and it would totally stand on its own, that might be actually a positive thing, because then you can like just read that and kind of be insulated from all the crossovers and, you know, all the other kind of thing, and you could save some money. But when it kind of pulls over like this one, or even like Exiles, which has so much of a characters and continuity that come from the main Marvel stuff, that you kind of have to have that background to kind of fully enjoy it, you kind of lose some of that.
Well, I think it comes down to, does it spin out of the main Marvel universe or not? And I think if it does spin out of it, in and of itself, it's going to make it harder for it to stand on its own. Whereas, if this was a totally clean continuity that started from scratch, kind of like the Ultimates line, or I'm trying to think, you know, like a 2099 or something like that, or a new universe to go even further back, that I can see as appealing, because you've got, you know, a sealed universe and boundaries you're going to bump up against in terms of there's only so many titles you might be expected to buy if they do a huge crossover. Whereas this kind of has the worst of both worlds. You know, it's got its own little standalone continuity in terms of it feeling, I'm going to say, pointless because it's spun out of the Marvel universe. Whereas again, if it were a clean continuity, it's like, okay, they think this is a solid enough property to go it alone.
Well, as a side example to that, like we talked about Warlord recently. Now that one, although it is kind of tangentially tied into the DC universe, I mean, they've had every now and again, you'll have some minor crossover with main DC universe characters. For the most part, it sort of stands on its own, and it doesn't feel like you need to read anything else to understand what's going on there. You kind of have what you need to know about Skartaris, and you got, you know, the sword and sorcery thing, but you got somebody from the modern world with, you know, a gun and all this kind of stuff brought into it. I think it's a little easier to get into that, and it stands on its own a little better than something like this that just because it's a direct continuity outflow of a specific story arc in the main universe, you kind of lose that.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. You know, something like Warlord, everything you need to know about Warlord is in the Warlord title. Now, again, like you mentioned, they did a couple of crossovers here and there over the years, but it's its own unique entity, and it stands on its own, and it's not derivative. Whereas here, you know, some of the characters we've got Wolverine, we've got a descendant of the Hulk, we've got a you know, new version of Ultron. I mean, these are derivative characters. So to understand who these people are, you need to understand the main Marvel Universe. Whereas, again, with Warlord, you don't really need to know anything about any of the other characters. And I think these days the publishers are you know, it's fine to build up a shared universe and stuff like that, but I think they also need to have each title strong enough to stand on its own.
Right, and I think also another possible sweet spot for this particular title would be people who really do like kind of slightly skewed alternate versions of characters that they're already familiar with from the main Marvel universe or main whatever kind of universe. I think some people like that kind of story, kind of like almost like a what if kind of story.
Yeah, a parallel world junkie, and I certainly yeah. fall into that category. I'll admit that.
So that is another one that I think if you're really into that kind of stuff, this could be in a bit of a sweet spot also. I think having some knowledge of the Marvel Universe also, because, you know, the reveal on, I don't know if it's much of a reveal, but the thing on the last page, that kind of, for me, kind of ties in that you know that character related to the Hulk, you know, had an alternate personality that was this at some point. I'm being like really cryptic here, but
yeah.
I don't want to spoil it, you know, but there's a certain amount, and if you don't have that context, then this is like, and so, you know, what does that exactly mean? It's not much of a reveal unless you have a little bit of context on the Hulk, even.
Right, right. No, I agree with that.
That doesn't even come out of the Fantastic Four run.
If anything, it almost harkened back to the Old Man Logan storyline, possibly.
Yeah, potentially so, yeah. Something that we haven't seen yet, but maybe we should have seen if it came out anywhere near on time.
Or might have seen in the earlier parts of the thing that came out ages ago.
And don't remember.
Exactly. Personally, I'd give Fantastic Four number one a 4 out of 5. I thought it was good, but, you know, not brilliant. And, you know, it's something that I don't know if that was the best use of the talent that Marvel could have put them to. They did a great job with it, but, you know, there were more marketable things out there to be had, I think.
I gave it a 3. I was kind of just like, it was there. It was an okay story, but it kind of didn't need to be told, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I don't think people would have been clamoring for it if they hadn't come out with it. So,
move on to Buck Rogers number 0 from Dynamite.
Yeah.
This one I liked in that this is one of the better uses of a 25-cent zero issue that I've seen. It's only a 12-page story, but they tell a nice little 12-page story. You get a taste. It's got really nice art, you know, and for 25 cents, you know, you're only paying 2 cents a page. You know, let's go back. Supergirl, 22 pages for $2.99, that was 13.6 cents a page. Fantastic Force, you really got a 22-page story and 9 pages of sketchbook, which I'm not even going to count.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. So,
you know, $3.99, you're got 18.1 cents a page, and here you're talking about 2 cents a page. You know, this is like a really good value for what you're getting. The art's really nice. It's got kind of an interesting story, and I think it kind of gives you a taste for what the ongoing Buck Rogers series is going to be. And some of the other Zero issues that I've seen, you know, they maybe go in and they'll print the first 12 pages of the number one issue, and then you get the number one issue, and it's like, well, wait a minute. I read those already, whereas I get the strong implication that this is a standalone story, and it is not going to be reprinted in number one. It's kind of introducing you to the character, and it's also not something that's just a bunch of, I've seen Zero issues where they're just a bunch of sketchbook pages or concept kind of stuff. And this, you know, tells you an actual story. I thought it was very well done. I applaud Dynamite on it.
I completely agree. This was an excellent deal at 2 cents a page. And really, for 25 cents, there's no reason for somebody to not check this out. This is something, you know, again, a quarter. Go get it. It's worth looking at. I thought there were aspects of this story that were a lot of fun and just kind of clever, cool stuff. I mean, the comment about the suit's universal translator needing a grammar check option I thought was funny. You know, the concept of having the captions as telepathic entries into a thought journal. Cool concept. You know, and it plays into the voiceover narration idea. Now, I think there are potential ramifications of that kind of technology that they may or may not explore later, but to me, right there were two very interesting kind of sci-fi, you know, concepts or whatever that you know, I hadn't really seen kind of bandied about or whatever. So I liked that. I like good sci-fi, and we're not getting much of that in the comics these days. The place where I'm going to disagree with you, Bob, is while I really enjoyed this and thought it was a very strong story, it set up Buck Rogers very well, I do think this is something that potentially is going to get reprinted. Not in the first issue. I don't know where, but, you know, at the end of the story, they flat out tell us, this is the end. For the beginning, go check out Buck Rogers number one.
Well, I didn't say it was not going to get reprinted ever.
I know. But
I'm just saying I think it's not likely that it just get reprinted immediately in the number one issue. And I've seen a lot of Zero issues that do that. I don't know a lot, but at least two or three.
Too many, certainly.
And that usually irritates me when I buy the number one issue, pay $2.99 for it, and 50% of it is something that I just read a month ago in the Zero issue preview. So, I mean, I'm fine. It'll get reprinted somewhere down the line, you know, whatever, but it didn't seem like it was something that they're going to turn around and reprint next month.
No, certainly not next month, but I don't know if they're planning on Buck Rogers being an ongoing, if it's going to be a mini-series, because the solicitation for number one doesn't really give any clue on that. So I don't know where this story fits into the overall timeline they've got for the upcoming Buck Rogers series. And, you know, as a result, it left me not totally sold on the series because it kind of felt like I jumped to the back of the book and read the last chapter. You know, if this had just been a standalone story or setup or something like that, I'd have been much more on board with this series. As it is, I feel like I kind of know how his adventures are going to end before they even begin, and that undercuts my interest in the series. Now, I think this is good. I think it is fun. I liked this, but I thought it was a very odd choice to kind of start with the epilogue and not like the prologue or somewhere in the middle or something.
I thought it was interesting just because I've never really seen that before in a comic. I mean, there are certainly movies that kind of start with the end and then they kind of flash back and they tell, you know, the whole beginning part. You know, so it is a device that I've seen used before in storytelling, just not like this.
And I'm not saying it's a fatal flaw or anything, but it leaves me with the nagging, you know, feeling like I may get to the fifth issue of a 5-issue series and halfway through realize, wait, I've read this page before, and be getting the last half of the book again. I'm not saying they're going to do that, and I certainly don't think they will, because I think they're smarter than that at Dynamite. But it raises that question in my mind.
How this ends, without giving it away, it's either the end, right? In which case, it's a pretty final end, and I wouldn't see them using it anytime soon unless they just had an extremely limited, close-ended plan for the Buck Rogers character. Or, alternatively, it's not as final as we think it is, and he's maybe shunted off into another dimension or something like this, in which case it just is a launching point into another sequence of storytelling.
True. I mean, they could totally backdoor their way out of it and do, you know, like a cliffhanger ending and then, you know, follow up with then, and this is how he gets out of this predicament he finds himself in. You know, I totally agree with that. I just, again, the feeling like they were jumping towards the end to get me interested at the beginning didn't sit well with me. Now, aside from that, I thought this was really well done. It was great art. It was a good story. I got a good feel for the character. I thought they had some cool sci-fi aspects. And, you know, it's a very different take on Buck Rogers than the old 80s TV series and stuff like that. It looks like a lot of fun. So, you know, I had already decided I would give it the issue number one, to where I got a full issue's worth of story to sell me on it, because, you know, I wasn't totally sure how much they'd pack into 12 pages. But they packed enough in here that I was happy. I just, you know, questioned again the choice of essentially which 12 pages they gave us, you know?
I mean, what bothered you is what kind of set it apart for me, because it was different. Yeah, I think they made more of an impact on me because of the difference. But I can understand where it didn't sit well with you.
Well, and the proof's going to be in the pudding. It comes down to, you know, how long of a series is Buck Rogers going to wind up being? And if we don't get this, you know, a couple of pages until, you know, 100 issues in or whatever, that's fine. But if, you know, within a year or so, we're reading this in the main book itself, either as the end of a story arc or the end of the series, whatever, I'm going to be a little let down by that. But by and large, Dynamite's doing some good stuff, and I have faith, so, you know, that's not going to turn me off from the series. And I totally agree that this was an excellent use of a zero issue and, you know, probably the best marketing, you know, bang for the 25 cents that, you know, they could get out of it.
Suppose my theory here is that I would rather theoretically be let down a year or two from now in an issue 6 or issue 12, maybe or maybe not, than be absolutely let down by the zero issue that I'm holding in my hands today. And in many cases, I've read zero issues where I'm immediately let down by it. So, I mean, I don't know that I will or won't be let down at any point in the future by this being repeated anytime soon. I'm going to go on what I got.
No, and I get that, and I agree that this was a good solid zero issue. It's good that we're not expecting it to be the first half of the number one issue. But it'll have been long enough, if it comes, be it, you know, 5, 6, or, you know, months, issues, you know, or a year down the line, whatever, that by the time if they do reprint it, and I'm not saying they will, but if they do, I'm going to feel that back half of the story, assuming this gets reprinted as such, was completely predictable and that I saw it coming, and that'll really cut my enjoyment of that. Because potentially, they've spoiled the end of what they're doing. Now again, I'm not thinking they've done that, but the fact that there is that potential, you know, that's the only thing about this that makes me question how effective it was as a marketing tool.
I don't see them ever actually needing to reprint this, ever.
Again, we'll find out when, you know, whenever they end the license of Buck Rogers. So that could be soon, that could be decades away, who knows.
But, I mean, they could end the license and still not reprint this.
True.
As an integral part of, you know, the last issue or whatever.
That's entirely true. Overall, I gave it a 4. I thought it was a really good zero issue.
I give it a 5 because I consider it to be one of the best zero issues I've ever read. I've been roundly unimpressed with most other zero issues that I've read.
I would agree with that, because I'm trying to think of any other zero issue I thought was competent in terms of its point of a marketing tool to sell me on the series.
Right. I mean, most zero issues, you know, I'll read and they're like 50 cents or 25 cents or whatever, and I feel like I wasted the 25 cents, you know. Here it's like this could have been a dollar and it would have been worth it, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They did a good job with that.
So I think that was it for me on this one.
Same here.
Now, I was traveling again this week, so I didn't read a whole lot other than these issues.
I only got about 17 comics. We just talked about three of them. And I've had time to read the rest. I'm liking what they're doing in Amazing Spider-Man. I think they're really, you know, firing on all cylinders there. Immortal Iron Fist was good. Invincible was interesting.
That was the only issue that I read other than these three so far. I liked the Invincible issue. I thought it was a well-done follow-up to the Invincible War that we talked about the last issue of Invincible on the show.
Yeah. Most of the other stuff I thought was fine.
And free comic book day tomorrow?
Or as they listened to this Saturday a couple of days ago. One thing I will mention, though, along those lines, is here in Austin, there is going to be a comic book meetup over at Tribe Comics. It is going to be on Sunday the 10th. It's going to take place at, I think, 5 p.m. over at Tribe Comics. And the guy who's organizing it, Chris, has asked if you want to come to RSVP. His email address is wintersoldier78@gmail.com. I'm planning on heading over there and just, talking comics with people. So if you're in the Austin area and you're interested in that, please come check it out. Anything else, or does that do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Justice Society of America number 26 from DC. Nova number 12 from Marvel, and Dean Kuntz's Nevermore number 1 from Dobble Brother Comics.
You know, Leroy, I really wish that there was a podcast out there that would review movies based on comics like Wolverine or Transformers 2.
But Brett.
And, you know, would talk about all these great TV shows like Smallville, Supernatural, and Heroes.
Yeah, but Brett.
And there's these great video games coming out, like Batman Arkham Asylum and Ghostbusters and Terminator.
Brett.
What?
That's us.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And being that you didn't know it was us, I will tell these guys where to find us. We can find us over at www.comic2podcast.blogspot.com. So if you guys want a podcast that reviews movies based on comics, video games, and TV shows,
listen to Comic Tube.
Yeah!
And be excellent to one another.
And party on, dudes!
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.